I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Real Spoilers, powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real Spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 430.
Milestone.
A milestone. This week we shall tackle Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald. I feel really dumb having to pronounce the W like that.
She's very adamant about this.
Is she?
Mm-hmm.
But no one else in the movie does except for
I think it's very slight.
I heard it.
I was listening for it.
And I heard it.
I heard all the other people say Grindelwald, and then I heard Dumbledore be like, Grindelwald.
Only the muggles pronounce it Grindelwald. You, if you're a true magic person, you say it with a V.
Okay.
Okay, then I'm calling him Grindelwald.
There you go.
See, we can do that.
Settles it.
I think if the movie was better, I would call him Grindelwald.
You'd be like, I want to get this right.
There you go.
Right.
I want to be true to this.
Considering that I didn't care for the movie at all, I'm like, I'm just going to call him Grindy.
Grindy. Yeah. Isn't that what's that mascot? That creepy mascot?
Oh, Gritty.
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 What a perfect tie-in for promotion. Was that a fantastic?
Grindy and Gritty.
Is he one of the beasts? Is he one of Newt's beasts?
He might be.
They're going to come out. It's going to be a big, you know, shared collaborative marketing scheme is that, yeah, he's Grindelwald.
And he's going to be related to a character somehow. They're going to be a secret brother or something.
Yeah.
That's what's going to happen.
They do that.
That's what's going to happen.
Spoilers, they do that.
Yeah.
Ever heard about this brother before? Nope.
Has anyone ever alluded to the secret brother? Nope. But Gritty's related to
him. Might have been a good dimension later on in the Harry Potter films, but no. Okay.
Now, why would you? So before we dig in, we should probably go around the table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Dan.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom, and we have a guest with us.
Hello.
Hello. Introduce yourself, sir.
My name is Michael. I write for WeAreMovieGeeks.com. And this is, I guess, like my third or fourth time being
Something
on
like
the
that.
Show. Yeah. So happy to be back. Thank you, guys.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for coming back.
So since Joe's out, he's our random, our typical synopsizer.
I think Joe would have struggled with this.
I think anyone would struggle.
I think anyone would struggle. Even like the true Potter fans.
I was telling these guys, it's like, I don't dislike this movie. But I did feel like I needed a key or like a map or some sort of reference guide because I'm like,
actually, it's
could you pause for a second? I gotta look something up. What? Yeah.
This is a first in cinematic history. It's the first movie comprised entirely of subplots.
Yeah, there's a lot going on, a lot of main characters. I think first of all, it would be good to kind of say where each of us landed. And, I think obviously the easiest thing to compare these movies to is the Harry Potter series.
Yeah.
And so the Harry Potter series over, you know, the course of 8 films and around 10 years, they were able to build up these characters. You know, they would introduce more characters, but they earned it. You followed these kids. You got to know them. Mm-hmm. You know, here we are in the second movie, and they are throwing a lot of main characters at us. They're adding more and more and more and trying to pack it into the second film in the franchise. And honestly, that's the biggest struggle, I think, is, you know, trying to develop these characters and to understand their motivations when you're really just cutting back and forth between these different subplots, and you're just like, wow, that seemed a little bit out of left field, like that action. But it's like, well, yeah, because they only have 15 minutes of screen time in this movie, so it's like you can't give them a lot of time.
I think not only that, you also have the fact that J.K. Rowling doesn't have source material for another screenwriter to adapt.
Yes. So this needs a book.
In this, you've got characters without a lot of motivation or without a lot of background, and they're just becoming ciphers for, like, exposition dump. Mm-hmm. Exposition dump.
Oh,
and
my
it's
God.
Like, and it's like if you had a source material that she wrote, like a book, and then you had a screenwriter that took, okay, this would be a really good part. This would be a really good part. I'm sorry. I hate to say this because I know, like, people are going to rip my head off for this, but, like, I don't think she's a good screenwriter. I think she's a good writer.
Right.
But just have someone else adapt. And you know,
she's great at world building.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
But you need somebody to come in and winnow that down.
And you see glimmers of that.
Yeah.
In this movie, that's why I was like, for me, I like this movie, and like everything was like a chapter. Like the scene, I was like, I enjoyed that scene, and then it was like, oh, okay, now I can't think about that anymore because now I'm over here and I don't know what this is. But let me catch up. And now I think I figured out what's going on. Oh, I really like this. Oh no, we're gone. Okay, let me go back over here.
There's no
now. What is this part? Okay, well,
because there's no sense of time or space in this movie. I know that they're magic, and so they can kind of get anywhere instantly. But I was constantly like, where are they at now? How do they get there? Why did they get there? It was like I never.
They all pop up and appear with their magic wand. It's like poof, let's show up here. Poof, let's disappear here. Poof, let's pop up here.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's also very discombobulated.
I felt why I was watching this. I was like, I wish this would have been a book.
Yeah,
felt, you know, like the last one was loosely based around a story,
loosely,
but it was more
loosely.
Of a journal. Yeah. Yeah, this I was like, I really wish this would have been a book.
Yeah, she's on her own. I mean, it's and the thing is, this
and
is
then
this,
it would have been distilled and yeah, and exactly. Half of this, what happens in this, wouldn't have been in
right.
It.
And the thing is too, the crazy thing is they are stretching this franchise to five films.
Oh,
this
is it going to be five?
It's five.
It originally was going to be three. Then they turned it into five. So you would think if they're making five of these things, do we have to put this much second movie?
Why are you cramming so much into this movie if you know you're going to make three more?
Do they feel like they're running out of time with only three after this movie? I mean, that's a lot of...
Do you think because she's the screenwriter that she can... She's basically reacting to the
reaction. I thought about that.
So now the next one should be like, okay, obviously I did too much. I'm going to bounce them back. And you know,
I think we're already seeing that. So what I was going to say is, so going back to the first Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, I really did not like that movie.
No, it's really bad.
I just rewatched it after this movie because I wanted to see, because I'm like, wait, these characters all seem different. I'm like, why are they acting this way?
Was Newt autistic in the first one?
He's not.
He's a stroke victim. I think he suffered from a stroke.
I was like, I don't remember him playing it like this at all.
He does not. And that's why last night, even though I just saw this movie yesterday, I watched the first one last night because I go, wait a minute, I have to see how he acts in the first movie. Okay, and this movie.
It's worse, I think, in the first.
No, in this movie, he does not make eye contact with anyone else. He looks at the ground. He's so meek and timid. In the first movie, he's shy. He does not act like this.
Right.
Between the first movie and the second movie, I don't understand why they or he decided to play Newt like this, because he is not like this in the first movie.
Right.
He's just shy, but like he talks to people. He's pretty much like adamant about the things that he believes in, and he makes eye contact. And the other thing that really bothered me was, who is Jacob's girlfriend, the ditzy one?
Queenie.
Oh, the blonde Queenie.
Yeah.
Queenie is not that dumb in the first one.
Adelaide from Guys and Dolls?
Yeah.
So in the first one, another thing that I looked for was, I'm like, I don't remember her being quite that bad in the first one. And the first one, she kind of talks like kind of ditzy, kind of cutesy, but she has it together. And the second one, she speaks so slowly, and she's like, oh, I'm just kind of stupid. Like, she doesn't talk like that in the first one. So I don't get why they changed their characters from one movie to the other that picks up 9 months or whatever pretty closely after. Like, why have their characters completely changed the way they act?
Yeah.
It's bizarre.
I'm glad you rewatched, because I didn't care for the first one either. I like this one even less. Yeah. But
oh, see, that's where I'm different. So the thing is, I did not like that first one, and I just watched it for the second time yesterday. But
I wasn't bored in the first one like I was in this
I
one.
Was. See, the thing is, though, is that so Fantastic Beasts, we've just watched 8 Harry Potter films, and they come out with this prequel, but it's so loose. loosely connected to the Harry Potter world. See, in this one, I feel like it was a direct reaction by J.K. Rowling to add more Harry Potter. We see Dumbledore, we see Hogwarts, we see characters from the other movies. Like, this movie is packed with Harry Potter fan service because I think she realized people were not happy about this guy and his cutesy animals. Like, that has no interest to me. I want to see wizards. I want to see fights. I want to see their origin. I don't want to see him and his bag of tricks, right?
Well, and I think that's the biggest issue I had with the first one was you've got the whole fantastic subplot. Like, you have to show him with his animals. Then there's, like, one cutesy scene of him chasing an animal after another and then pantomiming, like, a hippo creature in a park for some reason for 5 minutes.
That whole movie
and then
is
it's
just
like,
animals.
But then you have the plot, which is, like, the core of his storyline. And it's like, here, at least, I thought the plot and the story was more centralized, and it's like, it's more cohesive.
There's a point.
There's a point to it all. The first film, I just thought was just this jumbled mess where, again, sort of like what you talked about with chapters, and it's like, there's all these scenes, and none of them were really connected. And I don't know. I do appreciate, though, at least this felt more controlled.
Well,
I guess
it seems like they're pointing in a direction.
Yes, this felt like it had a point rather than to be like, hey, we're going to make this new series based on this little throwaway book in the Harry Potter novels. And so now we have to talk about Newt and his fantastic beasts, where it's like, no one cares about that. We want to see the wizards fighting and the mythos and, you know, where did all these houses come from and who was this evil guy before Voldemort? And like, we want that. And so that's where I think this movie excels.
Yeah,
I don't think they executed it properly, but at least it was like, wow. But my other question is, why are these movies about Newt? He's not the main character. Like,
we kind of thought
he's just there.
The last movie, I thought, you know, I think we all talked about it, was like, Newt, you know, will probably, we predicted that his role would be dialed down.
He'd be a side character,
especially
now.
Once we heard that, it was like, oh, and Jude Law is going to be Dumbledore. So it's like, oh, okay, so we're going to see a shift of like attention a little bit. Nope.
No, Dumbledore's like, hey, guys, you guys head over here.
Yeah.
I'm going to stay at Hogwarts.
And I will say that every time he was on the screen, I'm like, I think we should just stay here for a little.
Yeah,
just
it was
stay
great.
Here for like 10 more minutes.
Because that's what people want to see. You watch the 8 Harry Potter movies. You watch Dumbledore be a badass. You want to find out why he's the best wizard. Here's young Dumbledore. Yeah. We got him. We have Jude Law, who's a great actor, and he's great in this role.
And they've basically told us, oh, by the way, he's not going to do any cool wizard stuff for 2 more movies.
Yeah.
Because he's pledged not to fight him.
And
right?
we knew, I mean, here's the stuff that we knew. They knew Fantastic Beasts was sort of like a field guide. The original source material was like a field guide. So it was basically, like you're reading Scamander's journal.
It's a textbook. The kids in school, that's how they learn about these beasts.
And then they built a story around it. And, you know, when I saw the movie the first time, and I mentioned this, I was like, I saw it the first time and I was like, I mean, I know you're in the periphery of a world that's really fun and endearing, but just the lack of kids kind of threw me. I enjoyed it better the second time because I got over that. But it was one of those things. It's like, but we know what we know is that there's Grindelwald and then there's Dumbledore, and they do have, Rowling had mentioned stuff, you know, like they battle, and it's like that's the first like sort of battle, you know, just like Harry and
Voldemort.
It was, you know, Dumbledore and Grindelwald, and Grindelwald also has, you know, there's reference to like Nazis and, you know, Nazi Europe and World War, and so I'm like, okay, so we know. I was like, oh, so you know, slowly the attention's going to shift from Newt to Dumbledore, and maybe we're still watching that transition,
but you don't need
like,
4 movies
there.
To do it. Yeah, that's my biggest complaint, is that Newt is just a bystander. Like you said, he exists in this world, but he's this magic beast guy, and yeah, he knows magic and he knows how to, you know, put things here to there and capture beasts or whatever, but like, yeah, we're on to Grindelwald trying to take over the world and all these wizards fighting and everything, and like, we don't really need beast guy. Like, I just wonder why they've chosen to still keep him as the main character, because he's just there. He's not that special.
I think it's that old age sort of story where it's like you have the non-powerful person, the boy in the back of the class that gets bullied, who's sort of a dork dweeb rising up, you know, or that Samson and Goliath, you know, sort of vibe where it's like he's this timid sort of zookeeper, what do we want to call him?
Zoologist.
Pokemon catcher.
Yeah.
So we got the Pokemon catcher, and it's like, that's like what he does for his day to day, but he's going to save the world now?
So you think he is that
like
placeholder,
the
every
man entry point for the viewer, but then now he plays him kind of so weird. It's, that it's hard to be like, he's my guy.
I didn't I didn't like Eddie Redmayne to start with.
Yeah.
And I thought I didn't like him in the first one, but God, give me that Newt in that first one.
Yeah.
Because I'm telling you, I had to compare it. I like didn't want to, but I'm like, I need to find this out. And it is so weird in this movie. I'm like, why is he only looking at the ground? And
yeah.
like not it was a very odd choice. So very bizarre. So
if he stared at his shoes anymore, he would start a grunge band.
Yeah. I was like, why can't you make eye contact with people? So anyway, well, I think we'll have to use Wikipedia as a guide on this one, especially with all the years and everything that, that they're throwing out here. So apparently this starts in 1927. Grindelwald has been captured, as we know, in the beginning of the first movie. Did they say this was 9 months later? For some reason, that sounds right.
7 months,
few months later. So they captured him in New York, and so now I guess he's being extradited to the UK wizard land.
Sure, why not?
Like, you know, I guess they have, they want to contain him there, whatever. So this was my first really big complaint with this movie was this transportation. So you have wizards with spells that can bounce from here to there, yet they have to put Grindelwald in a coach and have him flown to the
UK?
But
how cool was that scene? That was like one of the best scenes in the film.
No, it was cool looking, but I'm like, why are we doing this?
Yeah.
You have people that even in this scene are like vanishing and reappearing in different places. We know they can go into a suitcase and travel to different places. Like, these are wizards, yet you have to lock him in a carriage like every movie that has a prisoner transport in a bus, right? Like,
what's the worst that could happen?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just like, you know, you have the most dangerous wizard in the world. You're going to transport him by wizard horse and buggy?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a wizard Con Air.
Yeah, it is. I don't understand.
That's part of the thing.
I just thought it was...
We don't need guards.
It was such a dumb decision. I mean, again, cool, but stupid. Yeah. It made no sense at all. So we find out that he has this follower, which I think he was in the first movie. When I watched it, I think this guy was one of the U.S. guys, because when you first see Tina and the U.S. Office of Wizards, I think this guy shows up. So I'm not 100% sure on that, but I think this is a U.S. guy. And so he ends up kind of breaking Grindelwald out. He turns and is on his side. And so, of course, they do some kind of switcheroo, which was really hard to follow, too. I couldn't tell if, like, they already switched places or used a spell to switch places with this guy. I don't know what was happening in this scene, but somehow Grindelwald got out because he...
Yeah. There was rain, horses, a stagecoach, and then people...
Thunder.
Yeah, thunder, and then just people, like, appeared
swapping,
and had a wig on,
yeah.
and then their hair changed, and
Yeah, it was cool looking, but I'm like, I don't really know what happened, but Grindelwald got out.
Yeah.
And then in this really... Okay, I'm trying to understand the character of Grindelwald. And again, I pretty much enjoyed this movie.
So is Johnny Depp, by the way.
Yeah. I pretty much enjoyed this movie. I liked it more than the first one, but I still have my fair share of complaints. So the character of Grindelwald. So he is a guy that is not afraid to kill people on sight. He evaporates a baby. He kills people in their houses in the next scene, right? But yet... When he swaps...
And to make it worse is he shows up with a funeral procession before they're dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dick.
So he's the kind of person that isn't afraid to kill people, yet when he does this swaparoo and escape, the main guy that's with him, he drops him down like he's going to fall into the water or something, but throws him a wand and saves him.
Yeah.
What is his motivation when... And then next scene, he goes and kills a woman and kills her baby.
Yeah.
But he saves the guy that's trying to imprison him? I didn't understand the motivation.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. Is it because was that guy like a pure blood and the other ones weren't?
Yeah.
Well, I'm guessing he was. Yeah.
I didn't think about that, but yeah, that could be it.
But I don't know if that other family was or not. They like just, is that just a random apartment they show up in, or was there a significance?
It could have been like a nomad family. Yeah.
Okay.
It's the thing that needs a book.
Yeah. Right.
It's like, I was like, oh, man, I think there'd be so much more here.
Yeah.
So, I'm sure there is in her head.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm just trying to figure out what...
In part four, we'll find out who that guy is related to.
There you go.
He'll be a brother or
someone's brother,
or a father,
right.
Or somebody. Yeah. We'll find out.
So anyway, so he kind of escapes. He's off. He's got his followers now. He's got like three or four different people following him around. So we cut back to Newt, and Newt is in his research laboratory, and he's got all his, I mean, it's cool looking stuff. He has all these different little worlds and these staircases that take him to different places. He ends up going into the water with this like kelp monster that looks like a like a Pegasus or something made out of kelp, and he tackles it, you know, just trying to give us
that
a little
cool.
It was cool trying to give us that beast, like it's called Fantastic Beast, so they got to show you some beasts. That's just par for the course.
And his assistant, which I was like, oh, she's got to be a much bigger part. Are you catching like all the references to this woman?
Okay. No, I don't know who this is.
Okay, so she's the put upon woman. And later we hear them like reading a newspaper article, and she's in the photo, like peeking behind, like looking wantingly at Newt. And she's also listed as like, here's Newt and Lita and whatever his brother's name is, and some unknown woman. So I'm like, they're very clearly.
Oh, were they talking about her?
Yes.
I heard that unknown woman. I'm
so
like,
I'm
who?
Like,
okay.
You know, and it's like, and you can see she's got doe eyes for him. So yeah. I'm like. I kept thinking, well, maybe she's going to show up in this. It's like, so I'm assuming she's going to be a much bigger role.
That's interesting. Like, think about that. Yeah.
But the whole time, she kept popping up.
So they're clearly setting her up for something. But she's just, in this, she's just an ancillary character that assists him in feeding the animals.
His lab assistant who
is in love with him. Yeah. So anyway, so she's there. But he ends up, he gets some unexpected visitors. He gets Jacob Kowalski, who's played by Dan Fogler. And then... what's her name? Queenie. I keep forgetting her name. Who again has changes in character completely. It's really weird how she really played up like the ditzy thing, which I thought was a bad move. But they show up, and then he's like, "Oh, Tina, where's Tina?" And he goes and looks for her, who, of course, is the love interest in the first movie.
Yeah.
And she's like, "No, it's just us."
Is that her name, Tina?
Tina.
It's Tina.
Okay.
Yeah.
He calls her Tina.
Okay.
Which in the first movie, I was like, "Yeah, I don't really feel that."
Yeah. Well, what's funny is like she,
I'm not shipping that.
In the first film, she, you know, even though I don't care for the actress, I thought, okay, we got this interesting character. They're going to, you know, really play her up in this next film here. And I feel like she sort of disappears in this one. Like she doesn't really have anything to do.
She kind of took a step backward.
She
from
takes
the first
a big
movie.
Step backward.
She's just, I mean, and
I thought that was going to be Eddie Redmayne's character. I thought Eddie Redmayne was going to sort of take a step back, and she was going to be pushed more to the forefront. And
But so apparently what happened is that she decides that she's going to go and do her this other big assignment, and she's mad at Newt because there's like a wizarding tabloid that showed Newt, Tina Lestrange, which we know that
Lita.
Name. I'm sorry. Yeah. Tina is not in this. It's Lita Lestrange and Newt's brother. And
some unknown woman.
And some unknown woman, apparently. And the thing read that Newt is to be married to Lita. Mm-hmm. And so she got jealous and mad. Because the first one, they leave
Wait a minute. Am I right? Am I right, guys?
The first one, I don't remember this, but they kind of do just go their separate ways. Like, they do have this connection, or they're trying to ship this connection. But at the end of the first one, she's like, yeah, I'm going to go back to the States now doing my thing. And it's kind of like questionable. Like, is Newt going to go with her? Are they going to be a thing?
Yeah,
but they're
like,
not like, we're together now, let's continue on our journey. Yeah. They kind of break apart.
He said, I'll send you a copy of the book.
Exactly. I'll bring it in person.
Yeah, you know,
I'll deliver it in person.
Yeah,
right?
Send me a copy, I'll bring it in
person. So it's not like they're like, yeah, let's get married now, we're together. It's like, no, I'm going to go do my thing. I'll come visit you. So,
well, he has to leave. I thought he was like basically asked kindly to leave the States in the last movie.
He kind of ruined...
It's just weird that like half the film now is just like her, well, I'm sort of upset because you didn't tell me about this other girl. Yeah. And it's like, that's like the half the film for her.
Well,
like, that's what she does.
It's that trope. How about you talk? How about you get it out? I mean, and the way that he finally does tell her, don't be happy for me. No, I mean, I want you to be happy, but don't be happy for me. I'm not happy. Like, Jesus, say, hey, that was a mistake. She's marrying my brother. You know what I mean? Like, the way that he stretches it out, and this is at the end of the movie, I'm like, Jesus, dude. But anyway, so she's mad at seeing that and saying, well, okay, we had this connection. Now he's engaged to this girl. Now, they do mention Lita in the first movie. Mm-hmm. She's not in it, but he mentions her because he carries her picture around with him in the first one. And so she already has established this, and then he hears they're going to be engaged. So she's mad, but she goes off on this assignment to Paris. And so we also find out that Queenie has put Jacob under this spell, you know, and of course he's a muggle. She's a witch. Is that what you... wizard?
Wizardess.
Okay, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah,
wizards.
Yeah.
Okay.
They might just be wizards.
She has magic. She's a pure blood, I guess, and he's a muggle. And so that is illegal, as we learned in the first movie. And so...
In the States.
Okay, in the States.
Wasn't illegal elsewhere.
It was
illegal
and also in the States, they call muggles nomadges.
Yeah,
so
nomad.
Make sure to you know get that straight, buddy. All right.
So she wants to get married to him, and it's not that he's not into her, but he's like, if you do that, they'll throw you in jail or in Azkaban or whatever. Like, this is illegal. We can't get married. So that makes her upset, and so she tries to put this love potion on him, and Newt sees through that, and he's like, if he really is going to marry you, then he'll tell us outside of this potion. And so that causes a big brouhaha, and Jacob...
That subplot bothered me a lot.
Because it was kind of rapey?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And it felt really weird.
And it gets consistently played for laughs.
Yeah.
And if the genders had been...
Oh, my God. Flipped,
oh, yeah.
I was really surprised that J.K. Rowling had someone put someone under a love spell to marry them like that. Like, that felt really weird.
And, like, not have it be played as a character flaw.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. I mean, especially, like, I feel like we were supposed to find it funny, one, because of the genders, and two... because of the disparity in traditional beauty standards between the two characters.
Yeah.
Right? Like, she is more attractive than he is.
Sure.
And so he should be honored that she's wanting to enchant him.
It came off very poorly, I think.
Yeah.
And so she leaves after he's, you know, like, oh, I told you, like, whoa, we're going to get married. And he chases after her, and she reads his mind, and in his head he says, you're crazy. And, you know, and it just because of this whole situation, and he's like, I didn't say it, you know, and she gets really mad. So she's like, you know, I'm going to go see my sister. So she goes after Tina in Paris. Jacob stays with Newt.
Based on experience, you know who really flips out the most when you call them crazy?
Crazy people.
Crazy people.
But she's not going to, you know, be crazy or turn bad at all, right?
No.
No,
not at all.
Nothing, that's not going to allude to anything later on in the film.
Not that I remember.
No, I don't think so.
telegraph.
So he finds out, you know, he sees the postcard that Tina sent Queenie, and it says, I miss you, I'm in Paris, you know, love Tina, whatever. And so Newt's like, I have to go after her. She's trying to get to Credence. Is that the kid's name that we thought was dead in the first one? So, oh yeah, another weird thing. So at the beginning of the first one, Dan Fogler's mind is erased, and you're like, you know, Queenie shows up in a bakery, and it's like they're like gonna fall in love naturally because he can't remember the whole situation. Nope. In this one, they're like, oh, yeah, no, it only erases bad memories. And I didn't have bad memories. So, hey, I'm good to go. Like, it was a very weird retcon. And then what was my other point? So there was that one that changed. And then I can't remember what the other one was. I'll think of it. But so it's like, so that whole thing came back to where, like, oh, no, Dan Fogler was the best part of this first movie. We got to get him back, and we have to have him remember the whole dynamic.
Yeah.
So,
and he could have easily been a character. I think in the books, he would have been a character that they would have left. But I think since J.K. Rowling is writing the scripts and, you know,
right,
successively.
I thought he was the best
part. I think
part.
She probably got, you know.
I loved his character in the first
one. She's getting
her
own notes or taking notes herself and saying, oh, people really responded well to that. I got to get him back in.
Right.
And so, in the books, he would have been done.
No,
the whole bad memories thing, it's like, oh, okay, you know, Dan down the street, you know, got his probably building destroyed that he works at. He's like, oh, I don't have to go to work the next day. You know, he probably had a good memory, you know, of that. So maybe he remembers it all, too.
Yeah. It was a very weird thing to where that character was supposed to just kind of be off on his own. But you're right. They brought him back from the movie. I mean, I like him, so I'm glad that he was there. But it did seem very odd. But he's like, yeah, I have to go find Tina. Oh, the other one was this Cornelius, whatever his name is, the kid Credence. So... Credence at the first one, you thought that he was dead. And so this is the other retcon where Newt is like, oh, but he died. And then they're like, nope, he's alive.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, they totally retconned it because I guess the story went a different direction. So he dies for dramatic effect in the first one. But no, he's in Paris now. So he realizes Tina is going after Credence. And Credence is this dangerous guy that has these crazy powers that he can't really control.
He's in an Oculus.
Yeah. And Grindelwald wants to harness that and to have him join his side. And so obviously he knows Tina's in danger. So he gets Jacob and they travel to Paris. And so we see this magic circus type scene take place. I mean, there's some cool effects where there's this huge, you know, lion creature that's flying through and everything. But this was another weird character addition, Nagini. Like, to again, now this is more like, hey, let's have more from the Harry Potter universe, which I like seeing, but I felt like at least in this movie, they did not need to add this extra character. She did nothing for
Well, you know what she is, right? She's Voldemort's snake.
Right. Yeah. But, yeah. But she does nothing but they in make, this movie.
I like that they, like, really go out of their way to, you know, say, but she won't be like this forever. Someday she'll be a snake, and that's all she'll be.
Yeah.
What do you think that means?
Yeah.
You know, so we're all like, oh, okay, good, that placates that entire thing. Yeah. And I think it makes that character, it's kind of a drag because it makes that character a lot more tragic.
She's
because now as a Horcrux.
Yeah.
You know, and like one of the final Horcruxes in, I think the final Horcrux
yeah.
in Deathly Hallows, you're kind of like, oh, well, I feel bad.
Boy, it's just like no matter what she does, she's
got her
doomed.
Head lopped off.
Yeah, and she's going to be
by Newt.
She's going to be Voldemort's attack snake, you know.
By Neville. And, sorry, spoiler.
Yeah, and she's going to be a Horcrux. And so no matter what she does, you can't escape that. But also, again, she does not move anything along. She maybe gives Credence a couple of, like, you know, tally-ho. Like, she's there for a little bit of moral support, but she does nothing in this movie. So I really wish if they were going to add her, they could have waited until they can give her something to do. But anyway, that's where we see that Credence is working in the circus. Nagini is one of these attractions in the like sideshow type circus. Yeah. And yeah, that's her ability is that she can transform into a snake, but she has this blood curse, which eventually it will be impossible to transform back. And we know how that ends up. So the two of them escape.
But think about this. A wizard circus should be something that like, if I'm going to go back to this, if this were in the books, we would have heard about, you know, like, people would have talked about, oh, don't miss the wizard circus. And it'd be like two books before. And then, you know, then it'd be like the next book. It's like, oh, when you get to go to that wizard circus? It's just like Hogsmeade. I mean, we heard about Hogsmeade over and over and over until they finally got there. And they built it up. And then they like made it was a fairly substantial part of being there. And it was always there. This, it feels like, oh, cool, a wizard circus. That should be awesome. Oh, it's cool. Oh, it's gone now? Okay, thanks.
It's just,
and I don't think it's coming back.
No, that's the
problem. And it was really cool.
Everything's condensed, though. That's the problem with having eight subplots in this movie, is that you get a little glimpse of things and it goes away. You get a
and that's what I mean. It's like, that's a chapter I was like, I think you could have stayed here for a little bit. Like, take a breather. Let's see what happens. But, you know, and make it a third of the movie instead of 10 minutes?
They also didn't need to make the guy that runs the circus the villain from Pinocchio.
He was.
I mean, that's exactly what he is. He's the evil guy that's trapping them all in cages, and he's mean, and, you know, I mean, and he looks like him with the beard. It's that's the bad guy from Pinocchio.
I'm getting into the puppet business.
So, anyway, but Credence, before the show, is like passing a note to Nagini. He's like, tonight's going to be the night we escape. So he ends up setting out a bunch of little, you know, I mean, the beasts are cool. They're these little electric mini dragons or whatever. They end up breaking loose the huge lion creature thing, and it gets out. And then whenever it's on the loose, I think this is where Newt comes in with the cat toy, right?
Yeah.
Is that which I thought was really
funny.
It
made me laugh.
I mean, cats love little things with bells, and so he actually has a little tiny cat toy on a stick, and the lion is like stops in its tracks, and he's like, "Huh?" And he throws it into the suitcase, and the lion goes after it. It's a cute little moment, but then the circus packs up. Everybody goes away, and that's it. You see a couple of those house elves, or you see, you know, one of the house elves is doing the like Merlin thing from Sword in the Stone, he's getting everything to go into the.
And I think you've only described one third of the film so far.
Yeah.
We still have so much.
Yeah,
more.
I mean,
it's like,
that's all.
There's
that
all this that's happened already, and it's like we're not even halfway through.
No,
yeah. That's what's so frustrating. It's like that's very enjoyable. Like I enjoy just like the packing up of the circus. It's just like I wish you guys would just pause for a second and let us savor that.
Yeah.
Instead of feeling like we got to
rush to the next.
We have eight more mini scenes that we're going to have to plow through. Yeah.
It's like the Griswolds at the Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
But I did enjoy that imagery, and that's straight out of Sword in the Stone when Merlin's packing up his house into his bag. Great. Like, it's the same exact thing. Yeah. So it was cool, but we've moved on from that. Now Newt has to track down Tina, and so we saw in the previous scene before they got there that Tina found this mysterious person. We don't know who he is, but they end up interacting, and she says, like, I think we're here for the same reason. So we,
and this is where I'm like, oh man, now I gotta, I don't know who it.
I know. And I'm like, are we?
He's
got a weird eye
sort.
Thing. I'm like, is he one of the wizards from Hogwarts in the Harry Potter movies? Like, I'm just trying to figure out like who are all these people,
right?
And that's where it's like,
having seen the film, I still don't know who he is or how he fits.
I know. That's why I was
to be honest. Like,
I'm I was like, I will be glad when somebody like goes to, you know, whatever, the Pottermore or Wikipedia,
yeah,
and I
updates
can, like,
it all, yeah.
I'm like, okay, click. Now let me guess who all these people were, because yeah. I was like, there were so many things being thrown out.
I don't think he has a tie-in, but because once we figure out who he is, but at first I'm just like, was he supposed to be one of the main characters? Like, I don't know who this guy is. So anyway, they're working together. So Newt, of course, Newt brings his little Niffler. Is that what it is? Okay, so Niffler is...
Is that a hate crime? What did you say?
No, I don't think so.
He's a pickpocket.
Talk to Rowling. I really liked him in the first movie. I like him in this one, too. He's a cute little platypus-looking animal, like pocket-sized platypus, and he tries to get gold. So, like, in the first one, they're in a bank, and he's stealing all the gold.
Oh, Psyduck.
Yeah, he's like a little Psyduck, yeah. and so in this one, Newt brings him along because he knows he's going to come in handy, and he mm-hmm. does quite a bit in this movie. Apparently, Newt does a spell that can transform footsteps into gold footprints. And then, of course, Niffler likes gold, so he's able to track them. So kind of an interesting spell. I thought it was
They actually did a much better job with this film integrating the beasts themselves into the plot.
The stick
creature helps get them out of jail. The gold Pokemon, whatever one that you're talking about. The Niffler comes in handy. So it's like... all of them actually function into the plot, which is good.
The first one was just, here's Newt and his beasts. And it's
and
like,
then there's
I don't,
the story.
I
yeah.
don't care about that. But you're 100% right. I'm glad you said that. Mm-hmm. I didn't think about it like that, but that is what I enjoyed is, yes, you see beasts, but they serve a purpose.
And it would make Newt more useful and integral to the story if it wasn't for the fact that he plays him so weird.
That's the only reason to keep Newt around is he has these beasts that actually can do things. So I could see that. They end up tracking her down. I'm just trying to follow along because this thing bounces around so much.
Yes.
So his name is Yusuf, the character that we're talking about.
Yes.
Okay. Tina meets Yusuf, another interested party looking for credence. So we don't know why yet, but she says, I think we're here for the same purpose. And we should say in the very beginning that we see Dumbledore for a very short moment. The reason why Newt goes on this journey to Paris is Dumbledore says, you know, I need you to go track down credence. And he's like, because Grindelwald is going to be after him. And he's like, why can't you go? And Dumbledore's like, I can't. And it's very, you know, he's very aloof about it. You know, we don't learn more about it until later, but he just keeps saying, I can't. He's vague about it, but I can't. And so, like we mentioned earlier, we see later on in the film, they have a blood pact to where they cannot fight one another.
Yeah.
And so he literally cannot take him out.
Well, and we also find out in this scene that Dumbledore is the person that assigned him in the first film to do that. So it's like, okay.
Wasn't it sort of like questioned in the first one?
I had no idea.
Dumbledore's name comes up in the first one, and he's viewed, even in the first one, he's viewed as somewhat like, he doesn't play by the rules. We're not sure that, you know, like in the ministry in the States, just as like the ministry in London, they're not a big fan of Dumbledore's. And so they questioned, I remember in the first one, they were like, are you here because Dumbledore sent you? And he's like, no.
Yeah, it's very. So I just watched it and I don't even remember. But they do when you see them. Yeah, and you can tell that obviously he did have a part in that first one because of their conversation. He's like, now I need you to go to Paris. And he's like, what?
Just like the audience. Why are you here?
Who is this guy? Why is Dumbledore sending Newt on these adventures? Like, Newt, if Newt was the chosen one, like if Newt was a Harry Potter with these powers and this legacy and this family, you'd be like, oh, that's why Dumbledore chose him. Mm-hmm. Newt is just one of his students that plays with animals
on the spectrum.
It's just so weird, but like Dumbledore's adamant about Newt going on these adventures to capture the most powerful and dangerous wizard in the world.
All of Harry Potter was based on the fact that it was a prophesized vision. We don't know that they haven't said that in this. It's like, well, I mean, because all the motivations and everything that he had Harry doing is because it was, you know.
But do you know who is the Harry Potter of this movie? Credence.
Wow.
Credence is the Harry Potter. He's the one with the bloodline trying to figure out who he is and his lineage. He's the one that is destined to do whatever he's going to do. Like, the problem is that you have a Harry Potter and it's Credence, yet he's this enigma in these movies, because it's like, is he bad? Is he evil? Is he misunderstood?
But wait, there's more.
Yeah, but so we'll find out. There's one thing that I really did appreciate about his character. I've talked about the character changes. Mm-hmm. They got rid of that dumb haircut from the first movie.
Oh, God.
Yeah. God, that was hard to look at. Yeah. Shaved sides and a bowl cut in the first movie. Yeah. Like, he looks like a normal... I mean, you know, he looks much better in this movie. I know that's a weird, like, superficial thing, but, like, that haircut was hard to look at.
It was distracting.
It was very distracting. Yeah. So they made him
like
look... Yeah. Yeah. With shaved... Yeah, it's bizarre.
Spread out.
So,
well, what you don't realize is it turns out that he's Pete Rose.
So anyway, but I think that's another one of my problems is, like, we should be following Credence as the main character. Like, he's the one that has to decide, am I good? Am I bad? Which side am I going to join? Am I going to help defeat evil? Like, he's more of the one with the legacy.
And that could be an interesting story. I didn't think about that. If he is Harry Potter, but he makes all the wrong choices.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? But it's like the movie continues to focus on Newt instead of on Credence, where Credence is just this side character that keeps questioning, who is he? And it's like, we finally at the end get to it, if it is true who he is, but they don't focus on him as, like, he is the one with the decision to make, and so it's just, I think it's a mistake to kind of switch those roles the way they did. Like, so Newt and Tina infiltrate the French Ministry of Magic for documents to confirm Credence's identity. And so this part can we talk about the CGI on those cats that are guarding the French ministry?
I don't even remember.
They were so bad looking. Yeah. It was such a bad job for a movie that looks as amazing as this one does and a $200 million budget.
Eyes were sort of weird looking. Weren't they like almost like weird diamond shaped, like...
Well, yeah, the eyes were weird, but they looked like cartoons. Like, they didn't blend in with the world at all.
Yeah,
so,
I agree.
So, and this is another one of those head scratchers where you're like, what are they trying to do? They're trying to get into Lita's vault to get a letter. Like, you know, it's without going back and watching it again. You know, during the movie, I'm like, what are they doing? I have no idea. So they infiltrate. Tina pretends to be Lita, and they get into Lita's mailbox.
And this is also the scene that we talked about earlier where they finally say to each other, hey, I'm not getting married.
Yeah, but like, they say it, and I was not joking the way that they say it. It's like, you would have thought on their entire journey together, he would have just said, hey, Tina, listen, that was a mistake. I'm not engaged.
Misprint.
Yeah, but they do it in this way.
It was the wizarding world of fake news.
Yeah, it was. It really was. And I think that is also kind of what guides J.K. Rowling on this whole story. Like, another problem I have is that they already really had kind of a good World War II allegory, and it was called Harry Potter.
Right.
Like, you had Voldemort, who wanted to take over and wanted only wizards, and you had these followers, and he wanted to get rid of all the mudbloods and all the muggles and everything, and it's like... You did that really well with Harry Potter, but J.K. Rowling is very vocal. She is very, you know, she's on Twitter. She's always talking against the alt-right and all that, and I'm not saying that's bad, but she chose to now tell this allegory for World War II, which they kind of already handled well in Harry Potter, and so, you know, it kind of feels like a retread a little bit. But anyway, so they end up breaking into this vault, and then Lita...
By going past the...
The librarian.
The librarian who in no way is bad.
Yeah.
Right? I mean.
But I'm like, that, you know, like when they walk in, she's turned around, like looking at them ominously in her chair.
She's like looking through like the cracks. And she's like, she's making the meanest mean stink face that you've ever seen. Yeah. It's like, let's just keep walking.
Yeah. So, but Lita actually finally comes in to go into her mailbox. And then she sees the little tree creature from the first one, and it like is peeking out from a corner. And I also have to say, so the relationship between Newt and Lita is very compelling. They build it up. They give them a backstory. They give them a history as kids. There's a romance there, but yet it doesn't go anywhere. You know, like, that's a compelling romance.
Right. All those flashbacks I thought were actually really good.
They were really good.
You know, seeing them in Hogwarts and...
But they build it up only to ship Newt and Tina and then to have her with the brother and then to ultimately die. Spoilers. You know what I mean? Like, they built up this whole backstory, but really, you never see a relationship between Newton and Leta materialize.
I'm sure that's going to that'll be in the next one, though. I mean, like, again, we've got five films, which I thought there was only going to be three. And it's like, oh, we're going to see the big battle between Dumbledore and the next film. But we got to wait.
Isn't that crazy to think in three movies?
So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure they're
Which means you have two more movies of Dumbledore refusing to fight.
Yes.
I'm hoping that after the end of this one that he's able to be a little bit more front and center, but we'll see. But so anyway, I agree with Michael, though. I really liked this backstory of how his kids, Newt and Leta, were together, and they understood one another. They were both kind of outcasts, and they were really close. And she goes back, and when they're at Hogwarts, she looks at their old desk, and it says, you know, N plus L. Yeah. You know, so they obviously were a thing, and they drifted apart over the years. But I really do kind of wish they would have just put the kibosh on the Tina and Newt thing, and those two should have gotten together. I know that she was engaged to the brother, but there's so many movies out there where the two people realize that they weren't meant to be together.
Yeah,
and
it's got to be a setup for the next one or
but
two.
But isn't she dead now?
Is she?
Look
she,
like it.
She died at the end of this. Well, which again, in the next movie, they can go, I thought she was dead. And they can go, nope, she survived. Yeah. That's how
okay.
But no, she's dead. And so I'm like, well, what a waste of a great backstory to never pay off other than to know that Newt cares about her. But, you know, it really just felt like too much to go nowhere. So anyway, they escape. The librarian and her 10 trillion cats attack them. They end up letting the lion creature out, and it just... They tried to do a fun escape like they did on the dragon at Gringotts in the Harry Potter movies, but to me, it was just so close up. Like, it was so claustrophobic. Like, the action scene, whereas it was fun, like, I felt like they were telling me to have fun. But yet they're in this little library type
area. A lot of the cinematography in this film is very, very close up. Yes. Like what I thought was interesting is it's the same cinematographer as the first film, but yet he has so many like insane close ups of the people's faces in this. And like the conversations are like shot really close.
I meant to mention that because I saw this in IMAX and I seriously was feeling claustrophobic. It's a huge screen and I'm like, pull back. He is in their faces.
It's also very dark.
Yeah.
It was hard to make things out sometimes because it was so dark.
Yeah.
I wonder if that was your theater. Like, to me, I didn't have that problem. Like, I saw it in IMAX. It was bright. Like, I didn't have that issue. But my issue is, like, I'm, like, on this mega screen with huge faces taking up the entire screen. Yeah. And when I went back and watched the first one, because I'm wondering, well, did the cinematographer, is that his thing?
It's the same cinematographer.
But in the first movie, they're wide shots. Yeah. Like, everyone's wide. But in this movie, they've got this entire huge world they've created, and yet this guy decides to pull in close to their faces, and it just cuts back and forth.
The only time where you really have wide shots is at the very end when Grindelwald's giving his big speech.
Yeah.
You know, then you see this big expanse and all the people and whatnot, and it's like, okay, finally, like, we got some space to breathe.
Yeah, it was a very weird choice, I thought, and I don't know why they got so close. So this action scene, this is the complaint that we had in like the original Transformers movies, was there's a lot of action going on, but we're zoomed into their you know, to their arms swinging around. So,
and there are some movies where the story drives the action, and then there are movies where the action drives the story, and I feel like this kind of does that. It's like they created these action set pieces and then wrote around them.
Yeah,
where in Harry Potter I felt more like the story led to, oh, and then we can do this with the dragon or whatever. And I don't feel like that's what's going on here at all.
Well, and also, if you like watch a lot of, or you know, either read them or see the last two Deathly Hallows, I mean, they devote entire scenes where it's just a couple of characters inside a tent.
Yeah.
And it's very quiet, and the silence is actually used to great effect. And it's those, it might be a breather, but is that really a breather?
Right.
You know, versus this, it's like, I just, they pile on, and I want them to just like go, I just really want you to just let's stick with this for a little bit so we can take it in.
It can't be David Yates because he's the same director, so it's got to be the screenplay. That's the only thing I can think of, is that, you know, whoever adapted those final films that David Yates directed was a really good writer. And not that J.K. Rowling is not a good writer of novels, but screenwriting and book writing is different.
Yeah, very, very different.
You've
skill
got
sets.
What are those last books, or that last book was huge. It was like 800 pages or something. I mean,
and
that
they still took out a lot of stuff.
But when you write a book, you're writing in detail, and you're writing, you know, and so Rowling tries to write in detail for a 2-hour movie. And
Harry Potter's the only franchise where they should have started breaking those books up into two films sooner.
I agree.
Not later. Like, when they did it to the last one, I was just like, well, you should have started that about four movies ago.
Yeah.
Because they're dense enough that they justify it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's entire, like, subplots that exist in those books, but they flow in and out of the within the book, that it never feels like you don't like lose track of who's doing what and what's happening.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you can still follow along.
I think that where those movies and those original books really excel, though, is that you're following the three kids.
Yes.
No matter how many other characters there are,
yeah,
we have three main characters, right?
Mm-hmm.
In this movie, you've got
like six main
characters.
You've
got Tina.
Yeah.
You've got Jacob and Queenie. We can lump them together. We have Credence doing his thing. We have Nagini dealing with her stuff. You have Grindelwald. Mm-hmm. You have Dumbledore.
Yeah.
You have all the different ministries. Like, I mean, you have Leeta and her mm-hmm. thing that she's dealing with. Like, you have and you have the brother that pops up. They talk about him in the first one. He's a character in this one.
Yeah.
Each one is dealing with their own stuff. We have not had eight movies to establish these characters, and there's too many. And the Harry Potter's like, sure, you have Harry, Hermione, and Ron, and you see it from their perspective. Mm-hmm. You deal with everything through them. We see other characters, but it all comes back to three characters that we've seen since kids.
Yeah, and all those books are called Harry Potter and Thee.
Yeah.
So you kind of knew. It's like, well,
you knew what your focal point
probably
was.
Will be
when,
around him.
When they called this Crimes of Grindelwald, I really thought that's where we were going to start. Like, because that's the story is about Grindelwald and Dumbledore. That's the story.
Are they doing it?
Yeah, they're supposed to, but they sure are aloof in this movie, aren't they?
Yeah, like...
Why tiptoe around it? And I'm
right.
guessing that's the studio, because J.K. Rowling...
As point out said, that she always imagined the character as gay and having a romantic relationship with
Grindelwald. I mean, based on her blood oath, I was like, well, without being just like overt, it seemed pretty...
What they would say in today's world is fluid bonded.
It felt like if people aren't getting that.
Right.
But why?
Like, how would they miss it?
But because this is Warner Brothers trying to make a kids movie, they don't say it. But I also feel like that was so cheap because everyone knows it. After the books came out, Rowling said Dumbledore was gay.
Yeah.
We all know they had a relationship. The thing that really gives it away in this movie is at one point Dumbledore looks into the mirror, that's supposed to show you your desires, and Grindelwald pops up. So if he's a desire, then that is the assurance that they had a relationship. But I felt it was kind of cheap that they couldn't just say
because I was honestly like, are they walking it back? Like
because they were so. Elusive about it,
I don't think that scene with them bonding was elusive at all.
Yeah, but a blood oath has nothing to do with being
there.
Gay. Kids made blood oath.
I mean, I know it was a memory, but it was shot in a way that it looked straight out of a romance.
It did, but the fact
it reminded me of the old Cinemax days when I was 13.
Oh,
it was a great time.
I don't disagree, but the fact that they won't actually verbalize it makes me wonder: are they trying to have their cake and eat it too?
Did Rowling verbalize that they were lovers?
Yeah
I think she did.
Did she?
I don't remember, but
or in love.
And then David Yates walked it back in the interview because remember, someone interviewed him a long time ago before this movie was coming out, but they're like, so you're Grindelwald is going to be a main character in this movie. We know that Grindelwald and Dumbledore had a relationship, and I'm going to butcher this is totally paraphrasing, but he's like, yeah, but something, something, something. We're not going to show it. Something, something. Like he was
because they don't want people in the South protesting movie because there's queers in it.
Yeah,
yeah.
But it's so stupid that. But if anyone was going to do it, you would think J.K. Rowling would say, "F you, I'm rich as God. This is my story."
Because at the same time, you can't make 13 movies about Dumbledore and say that the character's gay and never show him in a relationship.
It feels
like
cheap,
that's right?
Ridiculous. That's a really cheap move. And but for those who didn't know, but I mean wanted confirmation, he looks in the mirror. His desire is Grindelwald. So we know that. But yeah, I didn't like the only other line, which I still think was elusive, and tiptoeing around it, was the main, like, our antagonist from the ministry. He talks to Dumbledore when he tries to like handcuff his magic powers, and he's like, you and Grindelwald were close as brothers, and he says, we were closer than brothers.
You're right. Yeah.
So that's your other, but that still doesn't say, I mean,
yeah,
you can closer than brothers could mean like, yeah, we were just super tight. I don't know. So it was dumb in my mind.
Super tight.
That'd
be a step in the right direction.
Hey-o. So anyway, I don't like how they tiptoed around it, but yes, they clearly were together. Okay. So they break out of this post office that they're in. And this is where we get the story. We figure out who that guy was that Tina met back at the circus. So this guy is there to kill Credence. and we want to know why. And he says, oh, I am my father. They go to this flashback and he says, my father had an affair and he.
This was, again, I was kind of like, oh, do I have to draw this out now? I'm trying to, yeah. You know, cause I was like, I felt like I was like, I was going to have to pause it. Like, wait a minute, let me.
Yeah, okay,
so I know. There's a lot of. There's a family tree that stretches out this way. So this character, Yusuf, his mother and father were not Lestrange.
Right.
So Lestrange, the Big Daddy Lestrange, whatever his name is, I don't know what his name is, but he desired Yusuf's mother. Mm-hmm. And so he put a spell on her, which made her leave, another creepy spell, you know. But this guy's a bad guy.
He's
so
bad.
That's, you know, better than one of our main characters.
Yeah.
So not good, but better than the other situation. So anyway, he puts a spell on her and has her leave her family, leave the son and husband, Yusuf's dad, and he impregnates her. And that's how Lita Lestrange comes to be. So Lita is the half brother of Yusuf, mm-hmm. and the dad is Lestrange. So anyway, apparently then he had another kid, and that was Credence, or who they think is Credence.
Yeah.
And so Yusuf promised his father that on his deathbed that he would kill Credence because the mom died in childbirth with Lita.
Right.
So he wanted to punish someone for all this happened. And so he said that he would kill Credence, the only thing that Lestrange loved. So he's there and he's about to kill Credence. And then Lita goes, stop. You can't because I killed Credence.
Yeah.
And then you're just like, what? What is happening? Yeah. What is
going on? Then we get another flashback.
Then we get
another
flashback.
It's like, this wasn't real, but here's the real story. That whole boat scene is just mind-blowing.
It was a flashback within a flashback.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was just you shouldn't be getting an exposition dump. Well, you shouldn't get exposition dumps no matter what,
right.
But you certainly shouldn't be getting it 20 minutes before the end of the film.
That was frustrating. I thought the scene with when she was looking at the boggart and we saw whatever her memory was.
Well, I'm just like, you're afraid of a blanket? What is that like?
I thought it made that more tragic. And it was, again, one of those moments where it was like, wow, that's really heavy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we should pause and let the
let
it sink in because it's like, ooh.
Yeah, yeah. We should mention there is a good scene that we saw in the Harry Potters where the professor, whichever one it was, wasn't it the wolf guy? In the first one, wasn't he the one that was teaching the students and he goes to the bogger and whatever? Mm-hmm. So we see that Dumbledore had this same method, so maybe they took it from him where he would have these kids face their fears.
Yeah.
And Newt's is to work in an office, so his turns into a desk and typewriter, and hers turns into this blanket.
Yeah,
well, come to
really
find
know.
Out,
yeah.
this is there's a baby wrapped in that blanket. And so the tragedy was in her backstory, they were on this, not the Titanic, and they were sailing, and because I'm like, are they trying to tie this into the Titanic?
No, apparently it is connected to the Titanic. Like I read this, like people looked at the timeline.
Well, that's
and
what it looked
like,
but I'm like,
this is the Titanic.
It is the Titanic.
Apparently.
I question, I'm like, is that what they're doing?
I mean, J.K. Rowling hasn't said it yet, so, you know, she'll probably tweet about
it.
But it
is lining up.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's...
The timelines line up.
Okay, because, I mean, that's... wasn't the Titanic sailing from...
I thought we were watching a Titanic for a minute.
Yeah, that's what it looked like. Okay, so I guess apparently it was. But anyway, so these two families were on the Titanic. You had the Lestranges, or at least you had, like, the nanny, and you had Lita and her... this younger brother, and then you have this rando family. And what happened was the baby was crying, and I guess either she was annoyed by the crying or the baby was getting too much attention or something, and she wanted to rid herself of the baby. And she says, just for a moment, not to do anything drastic, but so she goes and swaps baby Lestrange with who we found out was Credence. So Credence isn't a Lestrange, but she swapped the real Lestrange with baby Credence, and then the Titanic crashes and
So there are powerful magicians on the Titanic, but they couldn't stop it from sinking, and they couldn't save any of the people.
They couldn't like make more boats appear,
So the rowboat, the rowboat that is with baby Lestrange, the real baby Lestrange, crashes. The baby sinks and dies, and so she's responsible for her brother's death. You know, in a roundabout way, she didn't mean to, but by doing that, she swapped for Credence, and that's how Credence became, a quote unquote Lestrange. So he isn't really a part of the Lestrange bloodline. So anyway, they go back to present time, and she's like, "That's why you can't kill Credence, because he's not the baby. He has no connection in all of this." So yeah, there we go. Whew. Hopefully that made sense.
No, it doesn't. But
no,
no,
but no. Not my fault.
It's, yeah, but that, the blame does not fall to you, no.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, so after that is discovered, the ministry, they track down that Grindelwald is going to be going to this tomb, this mausoleum or whatever. He's going to be holding a rally. And so they go to meet up with him there. The ministry goes to, you know, bring all their men.
I thought it was a little on the nose when everyone was wearing red baseball hats.
It is funny, though, like the wardrobe choices that they choose in this final scene definitely had that sort of like pre-World War II, like uh-huh. Hitler followers.
Sure.
Like the pants and whatnot, yeah. Like yeah. And the boots.
I mean, that's literally what she's doing yeah. with this yeah. movie is, I mean, come to find out at this gathering, you know, just skip right to this. This is Grindelwald giving a big speech about what is going to happen if the wizards don't take over, because humanity are the real bad guys. And he gives, somehow he can...
A speech about fear and fear of the outsiders, and we need to get together and make Europe great again. And this doesn't sound familiar.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're superior, they're, you know, mm-hmm. but the, you know, the problem is, though, that I get the analogy they're going for, but within the world she's created, they are superior, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, they're literally magic. They can
yeah.
they can say things and make things appear, and they can change, like they are superior to non-magic
technically,
people.
Technically, you're not wrong.
Right. So it's like it's not the same as when, you know, a white guy says I'm better than a black guy or whatever. That's not the same. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I know what you mean.
People with magical powers, they would be superior to people without magical powers. Yeah.
No, it doesn't mean they should wipe all the humans out, though.
Fair,
but they are.
But they are superior.
he says, you know, I don't want to kill them. They serve a purpose.
You know, we need people to drive the cabs, and
yes,
you know,
yeah.
You know,
but this is again where you question Grindelwald's. You know, his character, I'm trying to understand, because sometimes he just kills people on sight, you know, but sometimes he saves people like Queenie. He ends up going in this weird scene with Queenie where she's his, one of his henchmen is this French woman, and Queenie.
It's a Frenchman. No.
She, yeah, I think that one's already taken.
Oh.
so she ends up seeing Queenie, who's really upset about everything that's been going on, takes her into her house, and then she's like, you know, you can't leave yet. Someone wants to see you. And Grindelwald comes in, and he has this conversation with her, and he ends up letting her go because he's like, you know, she gives this big dramatic speech about everything that's going on, and he's like, you need to go. You're innocent. You're not a part of all this. You know, so sometimes he kills
but
people.
She's pure magic, so I didn't know if that was kind of his.
But he kills a lot of magic people that are against him in this next.
But they're
scene.
Against him,
right? Yeah. But she's not with him at this point. But it's like, you know, so it's just weird. I'm trying to understand more about like what are his rules? Who does he kill?
Right.
Does he,
and I'm not trying to defend it because I have no idea what the rules are. But I'm just that was just my prevailing theory of like, well, he can win her over to his side, then she's useful.
Which is exactly what happens. So anyway, he lets her go, and she ends up going to this rally, but she's listening to his propaganda, and she ends up joining sides with him while Newton, his brother, she's not with them, but Jacob's there too, the man that she's supposed to be engaged with. But it does feel kind of a weird character flip that the woman who is engaged or trying to be engaged to the love of her life, who is a muggle, changes sides to the person that wants to kill the muggles. Like,
well,
yeah,
you know what I mean? It was quite a...
There was a lot of side changing back then.
Yeah. So anyway, it was kind of weird. But so he has this huge rally, and, you know, he's basically like, come join me or you're going to die. So, and he's like, and all the people, all the supporters there, he's like, evaporate out of here and spread the word. So most everyone leaves, but then you have the ministry people, you have all our 20 main characters, and you have Grindelwald. And so people start passing over. You probably have seen the scene in the trailers where he is on this like circular platform, and he makes a ring of blue fire.
Yeah, yeah.
And so people start passing over. Now, one thing I didn't understand, maybe you can tell me, was his main supporter that broke him out of jail, who I think was one of the Americans that flipped, he crossed over, but he died. Is it because he was a human?
I think if you cross over and you're not like fully committed to the cause, then I guess the blue fire is this blue fire of truth or something. Right. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
That's kind of how I took it, but I also think but he's the one that got Grindelwald out, and yet he crosses over like he wants to support him, and he just dies. So, and I think he is a human. Maybe he's not. I don't know. Maybe he just worked for the American ministry. But for whatever reason, we'll go with what Michael said. But he dies. But people start crossing over, and then is it called evaporate? Disapparate. Okay. They all start leaving out of there. And so we're faced with, you know, Grindelwald with the main characters, and they're all shooting magic at each other, and this blue fire is coming out. I mean, it's just
shooting magic. It's shooting
magic. I don't know any other way to describe it. So they're having
a magic money shot.
Ooh, that's different.
Where's that Morocco? When you need? There it is.
I said it was a magic facial.
So there's this big showdown.
Resorting to hitting town now.
There's this big showdown, and Lita's there, and you know she turns to, I wish I remembered his name, not Newt, but Newt's brother, whatever his name is. She turns to him, and she's like, I'm sorry, and it looked like she, well, first of all, her name is Lestrange, and we know in the Harry Potter movies, Bellatrix Lestrange is a follower of Voldemort.
Yeah, but the Lestranges have obviously a pretty complicated history.
Totally, but I think that to the
we don't
the
know
average,
what the relation is between them.
We
apparently.
Don't, but to the average moviegoer, yeah. I think when you see the name Lestrange,
yeah, that's
and you know that
bad.
One of the villains is Bellatrix Lestrange. Yeah, so we're
it's
so
a red flag.
So it looks like she's going to go join Grindelwald.
Yeah. But I think that's also the like that's the history that she's always struggled with, and that's what they're alluding to.
Yeah.
When she tells Dumbledore, "You never liked me," and it's like, well, no, that's not the case. It's just you know, and she was disliked, but I think a lot of it was because she was from a family that's like, ugh.
Yeah.
You know.
So they do a head fake, which I think is a good head fake. She says sorry to the fiance, but then she actually tries to attack Grindelwald, which, I mean, who thought that would have worked? But okay, so she basically sacrifices herself. As far as we know, she's dead.
Yeah.
Big, you know, everyone's upset. Newt's upset because, you know, he loved her since they were kids and the fiance and everything. So they're all fighting. Grindelwald, as they're trying to control this, we should mention that who is this old guy? Nick? He's in the...
Oh, Nicholas Flamel. And I was trying to... He's
the creator...
He's talked about in the first movies, too. Like, he's...
He's the creator of the Philosopher's Stone.
Yeah.
Okay.
Did you...
And you see it. It's in this movie, in his vault.
Yeah.
So, his Grindelwald.
Yeah.
So, you see him, and he's an ancient, decrepit, like, 300-year-old man at this point.
Very fragile.
Yeah, very fragile. I thought it was
he
funny.
He looked good for his age.
He did look really
I mean,
good.
He looked very spry.
I liked
I mean,
it when...
I don't know what moisturizer he's using, but I thought his skin was pretty good for 300
I
years
know,
old.
He looked good for his age. Yeah. I like it when Jacob goes to shake his hand and crushes it, and then he does it again at the end, and he's like, oh, sorry, that was a good moment. But anyway, so he comes, and he kind of knows how to stop this, and he says, everyone form a circle, put your wand in the ground, and they cast a spell that will contain this. So
this is kind of how they ended the book. It.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Kind of.
Well, everybody in a circle kinda. Put their wands in.
They're older in this movie. So anyway, his blue flame is now transformed into like a dragon flame. It's this huge monster that is they say Grindelwald is going to destroy Paris. So they're able to contain it with this circle. You have the, you know, the good fire versus the blue fire, and it's just a big spectacle showdown. Eventually it gets contained. And then
Because where else is Jim Morrison going to get buried?
Well, it's true.
It's all in Père Lachaise.
Yeah, there you go.
It's like, well,
I think that's exactly what J.K. Rowling was going for. So they end up escaping. Grindelwald gets away, and they contain it. Paris is saved. Newt, and then this is kind of the end of the movie. What we didn't see, he brought Niffler, and we knew it was going to come back. We don't know why, but he brought Niffler, who only steals shiny things. So we knew, and we saw in the scene that Grindelwald is now wearing the little container, which contains the bond, the blood oath between him and Dumbledore. So now they're at Hogwarts. They go meet up with Dumbledore on the other side of the bridge, and he's like, "Yeah, we contained the best we could, or whatever." And then Newt pulls out this container, and Dumbledore's like, "How in the hell did you get this thing?" And then Niffler pops out of the pocket, and he's like, "Oh, very clever." And that's another reason, I guess, why they keep Newt around, because his creatures do stuff. So at least they're helpful in this one. And the movie kind of ends with Newt asking, "Can you destroy this?" So
they
can
take
come
his
help
wizard Fitbits off. His,
I saw that.
They took his shackles off, and he says, "Can you destroy this oath?" And he's like, "I don't know." Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where it leaves off. So, you know, that's...
There's one big
scene.
That's true. There's like the post-credits, not post-credits scene. But the final thing that we see is Grindelwald... Credence had joined.
Yeah.
And I guess he's not Credence. This is where we find out. So Credence had walked over and crossed through the blue flame and escaped.
And now he's CCR.
So
Grindelwald says, "This is all for you."
Yeah. So this whole time, we don't know why this kid is important, but obviously there's something about him, and now we still don't know his lineage. But in the last scene of the movie, Grindelwald's there, and he says, during the movie, you've seen Credence with this little bird that looks like he's been hurt, or, you know, he's mending this wounded little chick, and Grindelwald takes him, and much like in the beginning of the movie when he throws his pet lizard out the door, I'm like, oh my god, don't kill this thing, this kid's crazy, but what he does is he takes it and he like sets it on fire and it turns into a phoenix. Mm-hmm. And they had planted earlier in the movie that the phoenixes are, they go to Dumbledore's. Mm-hmm. And so
is it Fox, is that the name
Fox.
Of it? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when this happens, it's like, oh holy crap, like if you've been paying attention and this phoenix just came to mm-hmm. Credence, he's a Dumbledore.
Yeah.
And then that's...
But he's not Aberforth, the brother that we did know about.
Yeah, he's another brother, maybe from another mother. But he says, your brother is trying to stop us. Mm-hmm. And so now we know that Credence is really...
And I will call you Aurelius Dumbledore.
Dumbledore, yeah.
It just rolls off the tongue. It does. It's just, it's right there.
It does. So
there's also his sister, Areola Dumbledore.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean...
Well, and a lot of what they talk about it in the books more, and it is in the movies, but... So the two brothers that we do know about, Aberforth and Albus, they had a major falling out because of the death of the sister, who's the one in the painting.
Yeah.
And it's alluded to that part of, and that she may have been an Aquarius or Oculus, the same thing that Credence is.
Yeah.
She had that same issue. But that Grindelwald was part of her, you know, had some, you know, role in her death.
Apparently she stopped doing magic.
Right. So like all of that is there and that's all built. But then this new brother.
You would think out of all the books and all the movies we've seen that we've heard about his brother, we've heard about the sister, but we never heard about his other brother that apparently was a part of the battle with Grindelwald.
Yeah. Well, and not only that, you have both sides of the magical world. You've got Europe as well as America mm-hmm. going after Credence. And yet, for some reason, like they all know he's a Dumbledore, but they all keep it secret, I guess.
I don't think they all know. I think they know of his powers and his danger, but I don't think they knew he was a Dumbledore. I think only Grindelwald know.
But if they probably have some sort of information on him, if they're tracking him, and it's like if he's like integral to the, you know, everybody's trying mm-hmm. to get him. So it's like, wouldn't they have the paperwork or wouldn't they know that he's a Dumbledore? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, he's an illegitimate child they were fleeing.
Yeah, I really don't think anyone knew. I think only Grindelwald was able to sense it through whatever his abilities were. But like, yeah, I know what you mean though. Like if they knew, why is no one saying anything?
Yeah,
but I don't
think
they did. I think because of the switch and everything that it was just some weird lost thing. So we finally find his identity. I mean, I like this movie series is getting interesting. I like this movie more than the first. I like this reveal.
It would be more interesting if they hadn't assigned first names to either of the Dumbledores and you find out that Credence becomes the Dumbledore.
Aberforth.
Yeah.
I totally agree.
You know?
Yeah.
And I was kind of hoping you've been rooting for the wrong Dumbledore.
Yeah.
Well, because then that guy comes around at the very end because he's like...
Are you saying that maybe Credence would be Albus Dumbledore, the main
Aberforth.
Character? I'm asking Tom, are you saying that he should be the main character?
Right. Like they,
yeah, he's saying that he should be Albus, like, and Jude Law is the brother.
Well, that and that, you, that you've been, yeah. that, you know, that you've been rooting
for the wrong one.
You've misjudged
yeah.
which Dumbledore is going to be. Well,
that would have been
Dumbledore.
Crazy reveal.
That
and then would, yeah, that would have been insane. There would only be
riots
two
in the streets.
Yeah, but there would only be two that
even,
way.
But even this, I was like, oh, he's if he's Aberforth, we know that he comes around.
But no, we don't
but
know.
No, he's now,
we
he's
know nothing
brother.
About this brother.
I'm curious how hardcore Harry Potter fans are going to react to this because, I mean, it, she's rewriting canon to an extent. I mean, I know she created the canon,
yeah.
but it's like this idea of adding another Dumbledore. Adding another brother to a family history that has already been established.
That's the problem with prequels because it's very hard to do a prequel, especially for a famous franchise, because just like Lord of the Rings, just like with Game of Thrones, I mean, Harry Potter has a mythos and a family tree and a lineage and all these books, and you know they go into such detail. So when you just say that Albus Dumbledore had another brother, that's not a small thing.
No, it's
why
not.
Didn't any of the books or histories mention it?
Exactly.
So then they have to retcon it, and I guess we'll maybe find out why they kept it a secret. They'll have to. I can't imagine they won't address why we don't know.
I just wonder
feel
how
like
people
we even
are going to
gain anything from it.
Yeah,
like that's my thing. Is like because of this, it's a pretty major thing. But does it really? Do we need it?
It doesn't make it any more interesting.
No.
To me, I think that Credence, who for two movies we don't know who he is a Dumbledore. That's interesting to me. Like,
yeah.
part of me feels weird because this was made up and never mentioned anywhere. But then as just a moviegoer of this franchise, I'm like, wow, this is actually getting pretty interesting because now we have another Dumbledore and this Dumbledore is with the bad guy and we're hopefully going to get good Dumbledore fighting them. And it's like brother versus brother. I mean...
But to your point, sort of like you said, like there hasn't been anything even hinted at regarding this in the past.
And that's
so it's
the
like
downside.
You know, you just rewatched the first film, and it's like you would think that okay, if she mapped this out before writing all these five films,
the big F,
like if she did that, then it's like she would have sprinkled in little clues in the first film. It's like they're not there.
I think
they're not existent.
Right. Remember, at the beginning of the first film, Kowalski has his memory wiped. We thought Credence was dead.
Yeah.
I think after that first one, the first one was like, does this work? Will it make money? Once it did, they're like, all right, let's map this out. And I think they said, okay, we'll make Credence a Dumbledore. And we'll, you know,
I didn't feel like Credence was dead, though.
Well, they even thought he was. I just, it seemed like he was, but.
I mean, just because of that dark magic of being Ocularius or whatever it is.
That's true. There's always that question of, is he? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I really don't feel like, I could be wrong, but it doesn't seem like she had a plan, to Michael's point, that you think that there would be more little clues sprinkled out. It feels like it was like, let's see what happens with the first one. After the first one, now you can write your four more.
And she's very, very, very good at having all these things figured out.
Yeah.
Because like early on, I think it was in the second movie, the producers wanted to get rid of Dobby because he was going to be really hard to animate.
Yeah.
Like, and they were like, yeah, can we lose Dobby? She's like,
nope.
You can, but it's going to screw you up later.
Yeah.
Well, what
because he saves him.
Right.
What about Neville? Right. Isn't he the one that saves the day? And isn't he the other? Am I getting the kid right? It's not Neville.
Neville is the one that...
The other that could have been Harry Potter,
He could have been, yeah.
Yeah, so like that character, I feel like I heard something where maybe they wanted to like get rid of that character or something, but it's like, well, you can't do that because he's a major player.
But it was just, for me, I was like, she's so good at having all this stuff sort of plotted out. So when it was Dumbledore, I was like, oh, you could have been like... He could have been a Black and you know, like a distant relative of Sirius or something like that.
Yeah.
But it was like... Really? All right. Well, how does that work out? That seems large.
Hopefully she has a plan, and hopefully in the future ones will play out, because I think these movies are getting better. I think we have... It's Grindelwald versus Dumbledore. We're there.
Yeah.
It was a little messy getting there, but I feel like this movie felt like more of a Harry Potter movie than Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
Yeah, there's a lot more magic.
Yes.
Yeah, like
I was
said,
in the world. We're in Hogwarts.
Yeah.
We see
could have been two movies.
It could have been, but I'm just glad that we're... This is another Harry Potter movie.
Yes.
As opposed to a pocketbook spinoff, right?
Like I said, I enjoyed, like, I just had to, like, disassociate each scene from another to just enjoy, like, I like this scene, what's happening? And then I would like the next one, but it was like, yeah, but I was really done with the other one. And it's like, I went to a restaurant where I'm like, I really like this. Hey, where are you taking that? Oh, okay, try this. Oh, that's delicious. Oh, you got to take that away, too. Okay, thanks.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. So she... I mean, she's a multi-billionaire. These movies make multiple billions. They have all these movies set up. They've got the message. Whether they listen to it or not is one thing, but I think they will. This movie's a 44% on Rotten Tomatoes. Yeah. It is the lowest rated Wizarding World movie ever by a long shot. People,
and this isn't all just, you know, Johnny Depp.
No, exactly.
It felt like they had Johnny Depp for like 4 days.
Yeah, totally. Well, and they also like
that
scene
between Johnny Depp and Credence on that roof. Yeah. You never see Johnny Depp in a shot with the other two actors. Yeah. Yeah. Not one time.
They're keeping him at arm's length. I mean, it's his back on the poster.
Yeah,
which is interesting because they're all facing him. Yeah. It's his back, so they're doing back advertising. Then he hasn't been in any of the like press junket stuff or anything like that. So. But I was like, that's not that. That's not part of it.
No,
I
mean, but the problem people are having.
He's not, honestly, I didn't have a problem.
I think he's very low key in this.
He's kind of acting.
He's toned down in this. He's not Jack Sparrow. He's toned down.
Right.
I sort of got a little bit of like a David Bowie, like a later in life David Bowie vibe. Like he was going for this like
pretty
stoic
sure,
British
yeah.
gentleman.
You know, he always has his like his source material, and I'm pretty sure Bowie. Yeah. Well,
I was thinking like Bowie later in his life.
That Bowie was a source material thing. It felt like it.
Yeah.
It looked like it, but yeah, it was just
real quick to wrap up my point though. So this movie got a 44% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
It only has like a 70 something percent audience, which for a series like this is low. And you know, people have a lot of complaints. Hopefully they listen. Hopefully Rowling is taking all this into consideration. And the next three movies, if they're going to do three, hopefully they develop the characters, move a little slower and not try to cram so much in. Like I hope that they learn, like with the first one, how they added more Harry Potter stuff. Hopefully they'll learn about the pacing and centralizing, you know, the subplots. And let's hope that they just keep getting better and better as they go. Yeah.
They could have just had more, a little bit more of a journey in this.
Yeah. But with movies, I mean, as many as they've made, as high profile this franchise is, they shouldn't still be figuring it out.
Right.
That's ultimately
but they're figuring out how to do a spin-off. It's not, this isn't Harry Potter, and that's the problem is
but I don't expect them to learn on my $15 like they you know what I mean, like these aren't new filmmakers. They've been making films for a long time at a very high level,
but sometimes you just don't know how the audience is going to react though.
But that's why it's like, I mean, again, Deathly Hallows split across two movies and they contribute a major portion of that story in a tent.
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel wrong. And it works. And it's important. And it feels good. And it feels resonant. And then this one is just like, you guys are slow down for
a second. Well, this is the big question mark, really, because it's like you have five movies to tell this story. So you would think that, okay, they are splitting this one story into five, but yet you pack so much into number two. Yeah, it doesn't make sense. So.
I think they regret the first one, and they tried to cram two movies worth of story into this one.
Yeah.
Yeah, really, the plot of this should have been one and two.
Yeah.
That first one, introducing Newton as crazy creatures, is just...
Yeah, the running around in Central Park thing is like, that was probably unfortunate.
So, Dan, do you have a video recovery for us?
God, I lost it.
dun, 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 dun.
It was well, you know what? I'm gonna go with Kevin. I blanked on it. I'm gonna go with Sword in the Stone.
Hey, there you
if
go.
You've not seen Sword in the Stone, and it's one of those Slider Disney animated films that it's the character, you know, Merlin has been used and a lot of other ancillary stuff. He was even on like Sophia the First. it's one of those, I can't remember what year it came out.
Was it
the 40s or 50s?
No.
Oh, no. 60s?
It was later.
Was it later?
It was towards the end of Walt's tenure.
Okay. I've never seen the film. I've always wanted to.
It's a
63.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So it's like more of a, and he wasn't like full, like he was working on other stuff at the time. So, and it's a very slight film. It's very short, but it is, a great one to sort of tell the story of Arthur in a way that doesn't feel like, you know, like there's so many remakes that we've seen.
It's and not it's a way about, you've seen.
It's all about magic and fun. And I mean, there's a villain in the movie, but, you know.
Did that come out right before the animated Jungle Book? Or was it around the same time
period? Might be around, I think it's around the same time.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah.
Yeah, I really like it. And you can get it on digital in like a really nice pristine HD copy. And I want to say it's one of those that's only like 10
or
15. It's not a $20 one. Like
Jungle Book was 67.
Okay. Yeah, no, it's a very, again, it's sort of like in the same way, like Dumbo is also a very slight, like there's not a lot to it. Dumbo.
So I would kind of put this one, I put this up there with The Wind in the Willows, The Reluctant
Ichabod,
Dragon,
yeah,
Ichabod, really. and Sword in the Stone, whereas Sword in the Stone I think is at the top of those. Like, it's more of a movie than those, but I still put it down in that category with the secondary.
Yeah, it's Disney not stuff. It's not like, I mean, it's not even like Aristocats.
Yeah.
Not Aristocrats.
Yeah, make sure you get the right one if you're watching with the kids.
Yeah, especially with the kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very
apologies
enjoyable,
in advance. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Dan.
Yeah.
So I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Dan. You can find me on DanGraney67, GRANEY.
This is Michael. You can find me at WeirdMovieGeeks.com and also on Twitter at MP Hafner.
And you have a review of this, right?
I do have a full review. So check it out on WeirdMovieGeeks.com.
And this is Kevin. You can follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. You can find the show online at Facebook.com/Real Spoilers or on Twitter at Real Spoilers or on Patreon at Patreon.com/Real Spoilers. So that's it for this one. I don't know where we'll go next week. It's an embarrassment of riches.
Wow.
There are so many movies coming out.
Who knows? I mean, we definitely know all the choices, but we just can't pick one here. So.
Yeah, we might have to pick multiple.
We'll see.
We shall see. So that's what you have to look forward to, which is you don't know, but we don't know. So we're not hiding it from you. We're lazy and don't know either.
This is called transparency.
Yes.
I was trying to downplay that, but
no,
apparently.
We don't know what we're doing. So, but after 430 of these, you should have figured that out by now. So that's it for this one. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, Jimmy's Lunchbox has photos in it.
In an age when nature and magic rule the world, there is an extraordinary legend. The story of a warrior who communicates with animals, who fights sorcery and the unnatural. His name is Newt. Last of his tribe. He's also called Beastmaster.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style. Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.